This episode is brought to you by Seems Easy Record Sleeve Repair Strips. If you collect used records, you need some Seems Easy strips handy for record sleeve repair. They're super easy to use and repair those seam splits to make them like new.
Ask your record store for Seems Easy or go to SeemsEasy.com.
Seems Easy with two Z's. SeemsEasy.com. And now, on with the show. Well, hey there, everyone. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 379 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today we've got a nice long chat with Mr. Kevin Rootmanis, who you may know from Cows, Melvins, Tomahawk, and he's releasing new music with Hepatitis and a collaboration with Trevor Dunn, who you likely know from Mr. Bungle, John Zorn, and a ton of other projects. Now, Kevin has two very limited vinyl records coming out on February 17th, including Crackpot Whorehead with Trevor Dunn, limited to 360 vinyl copies, and Hepatitis Uneat, limited to 310 vinyl copies. So you'll want to get them as quick as you possibly can. You can go to rockishell.bigcartel.com or message Gina Squaz on Facebook and get them direct from the artist. Grab them fast, as there's only a few of these lovely art vinyl pieces available, and once they're gone, they are gone. Now today, Kevin is what the Australians call full of beans, which is an Australian expression meaning lots of energy. He's truly entertaining. He discusses lots of stuff, including the two new records, his time with Melvins, the rare records he plays on, joining and playing with Tomahawk, his memories of working with Ipecac Records, AMREP, the Hayes XXL vinyl reissues of Cow's music, his own vinyl record habits, and lots more. And hey, if you're a patron of The Vinyl Guide, there is an extended version of this interview available at patreon.com/vinylguide, plus a full video. That's right, Kevin does lots of hat changes. There's many visual gags in this very entertaining conversation, and you'll only get to see it and enjoy the extras at patreon.com/vinylguide. And finally, if you're new to the Vinyl Guide podcast, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here. And when you're done with this interview with Kevin, check out some of our other podcast episodes, including episode 376 with Spike Slauson of Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, episode 372 with Jerry A. Lang of Poison Idea, episode 359 with Michael Crane of Dead Cross, episode 351 with Brian Baker of Bad Religion, Minor Threat, and more, episode 350 with Mr. Tom Hazelmeyer himself talking all the rare records of Amphetamine Reptile and more. Subscribe or follow the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. So there we are. With the upfronts done, let's get into the meat of the sandwich today and straight into our conversation with Mr. Kevin Rootmanis. Greetings.
Greetings. My hat. I got my hat on.
That's a lovely hat.
I wore it for this. Is that okay?
That's fine. What kind of hat do you call that?
Well, I don't like the word cowboy hat.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is.
Well, it's kind of a cowboy shape, but it's got the round bulbous end to it.
The big dome. It reminds me of, like, I've seen, like, old pictures of American Indians wearing hats like this. I just wear it because it's in the promo pictures.
Well, that is quite the fancy hat. I like it.
You want me to take it off?
No, please keep it on. Please. Do as you feel. You wear a turban if you want. I'm fine.
You know, I have a turban. And I thought about
it. Should we do a hat switcheroo, like a costume change, like at the host?
How about
of
halfway
the,
through? How about halfway through? You say, "Hey, put a different hat on," and I'll grab another hat.
Oh, I wish I had a bell to ring.
I have a bell.
Okay, you could do all the work. Okay, just ring the bell whenever you feel like a hat change. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin is going back to his hat emporium. He's wandering the halls of the Rootmanis estate, gathering all his hats, coming back with armfuls of hats. Oh, my goodness.
I got a few of them. Look at my bell.
Oh, very good. All right. You have the bell. Let's hear the bell, just a little bit of a teaser so we know what to listen for. Bing! Yes, time for a hat change. All right. Well, Kevin Rootmanis here, fresh from his hat room in the vast Rootmanis estate here on the Vinyl Guide. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate.
Thanks for having me.
The mainstream media has referred to you at times as the godfather of grunge, the Pocahontas of the Portland sound. How do you respond to those critics who said you'd never walk again?
I say you were right, and here I am stuck in this pair of pants.
With hats. You're back with a couple of records here. You haven't been sitting still, that's for sure. Two albums out February 17th. I'm going to try like hell to get this episode out before then, so people have an actual shot at getting these records, because there's only, as I understand, about 250 of each available. Is that right?
Something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah, they're short runs, but they'll be available for download.
Well, that's good. But our listeners like the vinyl records, so that's what they're going to make the run on.
Yeah, really beautiful packaging.
So, how long have these kind of been in the hopper? How long have they kind of been under production?
They were recordings were done, mixed, and mastered. You know, maybe the end of last. Well, it's been at least a year, but we had to postpone it because of the pandemic. All the pressing plants were way behind, so this was the earliest we could get them out. So I think that's why Joachim at Rock as Hell, Joachim, I don't know how he pronounces his name. That's why he decided to release them together, I think, because get them out.
Okay. You have two of them at the same time just by chance. This isn't a use your illusion type thing.
Sure. It's an illusion. But yeah, it's just, they were done and why not?
Are they connected in any way besides you? I mean, do they have any sort of shared theme or?
No shared theme. I mean, there's this ongoing vague work ethic where I really like to let people have a lot of input. I don't do a lot of controlling. So the parameters are wide for what can happen.
Well, you get someone like Trevor Dunn on your record. You don't want to, you want him to take it where he wants to take it.
Exactly. And I don't think that's always, not even just with Trevor, with anyone. I don't think people always let people, like with the guy that mixed, Jim, who mixed both records. He's so good and he's done it so long. And I've stood on the shoulders of so many engineers because I've made so many records that it was time to go. Let's hear it, go crazy. And I always tell people that I play with too, do that stuff that other people won't let you do. Go nuts. This is your big chance. So I like to work that way. It works well for me.
Now, I've listened to them both. They both have a very separate feel, at least to me. Like,
I think so.
There seems to be a, let me get a drink here. I will cut this part out because I'm a professional.
Well, I don't think you should.
So with the Hepatitis record, it seems to be more of a music concrète, where with the Trevor Dunn collaboration, more instruments in tune on that one. How do you kind of separate the two?
I wouldn't have thought to call Hepatitis music concrète.
It feels a little darker.
For sure. It's what?
It feels a little darker to me.
Oh, sure. Okay. That was wasn't intentional. I had this overarching kind of thing. That's twice I've said that word. There's a thing that I've been motivated by of kind of keeping things in some way fun for the listener, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be, things can go as strange or chaotic or whatever you want, but I wanted to kind of keep a funness about it. I don't know. That's a vague word, but I don't know how else to put it. You just kind of bring this up a lot in interviews. Have you ever heard of this guy, Davey Williams? He recently passed away. He was a kind of a free guitar guy. He's not that well known.
No, I haven't.
Well, his stuff is pretty abstract and chaotic, and I really like it, but it's cheerful. That's the word I want. Not fun, cheerful. Mm-hmm. I wanted this stuff to be kind of cheerful. Just as an exercise. And I think we did it.
And you've kept very busy the last few years. There's some limited runs. And again, this conversation is for a lot of record collectors. And so many of them may be familiar with some of the vinyl pressings or the lathe pressings that you've done over the last few years. Tell me a little bit about that. Because as you create music, you're putting it out on these extraordinarily limited releases, 25 and 50, that sort of thing.
Right.
What is your thinking behind kind of putting your projects, spending a lot of time creating the projects, but then putting them out in these limited forms?
Well, it was a couple things. The main thing that was going on is it was during the pandemic. And that's why I was suddenly had this outburst, because I had so much time to work on stuff. And that was great. I think I was able to work on music more consistently and constantly than since ever, since I started doing this. And that was so great. It was because, you know, everyone stayed at home and I had stuff at home. So that led to this ability to do, like the lathe cut, I'm sure you know, I don't know if everyone knows, they're cut in real time, meaning it takes as long to make each record as the music plays. So you can't, I mean, you could make 1,000 of them, but it'd take a really long time. And so I was doing these limited runs. The music was strange. I knew that. We were doing really nice art. My wife, Gina, is paints under the name Mao Squaz. She's pretty well known, and she does really beautiful art. And so we found this guy that does lathe cuts and does really nice printing of the covers. So we just started doing these limited edition 30-cut weird music, but a lot of fun. And then I it was still during the lockdown, so I just asked Trevor if he wanted to do one. So we did one of, like you said, I think it was 50 copies. Excuse me. And we were really pleased with it. And it was fun and everything else. We worked well together. So I just said, you want to do a, no, let's do a full, a real one. And I think we used two songs from the lathe cut even and remixed them.
So how does the music come together with Trevor, who I'm assuming is on the other coast? You guys weren't physically
together. He's New York.
Yeah. So you would send stuff out to him. How much material would you have before you sent him his track to ideate and create his end of the bargain?
Very little. We both did the same thing. He sent me stuff and I sent him stuff. And sometimes we might send, there was no direction really, like, oh, I'm thinking this or that. Just sent it, said, you know, go ahead. And then he'd send it back, and I might send it back or I might not, you know, and or same the other way. And I mean, it wasn't just bass stuff. He added all kinds of stuff, and so did I, you know, and it was, we were just, I mean, it was just a lot of fun. And obviously, Cam, the very first time I ever did, I sent him this blathering racket, just, and I almost regret, I was like, shit, I should have sent him something more enticing to make him want to do this. And he sent it back with this beautiful bowed part to it. I'm like, oh my God, it was so cool. So then, you know, it was easy from there.
The name of the album, or at least the Dunn Root Madness album, Crackpot Whorehead.
I did not expect all the attention that title got. Like, every interviewer has brought it up, and I didn't expect it at all. It was Trevor, how about this? You know, we're throwing it at you. He said that. And I said, yeah, that's great. That's it. I didn't expect the reaction it got. I guess it's the word whore. Is that why?
It seems like compound words gone wild.
That's exactly right. He switched pothead with crack whore.
Yeah.
Cut him in half. I thought it was really funny, you know, that was it, you know. Oh, that's great. Where'd you get that? Oh, I made it up. Okay.
It's an easy mistake to make.
Right. I quite like that title, but more European people are just like, oh, I'm really surprised.
Okay. Well, maybe from, you know, being from the U.S., or I'm in Australia now, but being from the U.S., you hear crackhead, you hear those sort of words quite often.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't mean a lot.
It really doesn't.
In Europe, you know, with the multiple languages, they read things very closely to make sure they understand as they self-translate. So that's probably...
That makes sense.
Yeah. The other record, the Hepatitis record, Uneat.
Mm.
Yeah. What was the provocation for that? Yeah.
It's slang for vomiting, and it really made me laugh when I came across it. It's like, oh, that's funny. Uneat. It's so genteel in a way. It really made me laugh. That was about it.
I'm going to start using that. I got to, you know, I'm going to teach my kids that, and that will,
Oh, honey, did you uneat your pizza?
I'm not feeling well. I think I have to go uneat.
I have to go uneat for a second.
I saw crackpot whorehead in the train station uneating.
Yeah, uneating all over the place. The cops came.
Yeah, there was a guy uneating on the L train.
Yeah.
All right, time for a hat change, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know.
That's all right.
Thanks for letting
ding,
me
ding, ding. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, what do we call this?
Radical.
That is, yeah, it's almost like a like the goth Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, I really like it. I got it at a, look at that. But.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. It blends right in. I can't tell.
I got it at like a Salvation Army or something. Deeply impressed. Okay.
Wonderful. All right. So again, recent years, you've done a lot of the lathe cuts. A lot of the work that you do becomes very collectible. Are you aware of kind of a lot of the, you know, the trading and the desire for a lot, of, especially the limited edition?
You mean in broad terms, am I aware?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been buying records myself for, I am excited when I have something that's not, that's hard to get. Mm-hmm. So I get it.
Okay.
I'm not a, my thing is I would rather find a crappy copy of something rare for cheap, you know, than a pristine. I just think it's cool to have the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Are you aware of the Love It to Death Alice Cooper record with the original cover? He's standing up and he's got his thumb sticking out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I banned it. Well, I found a beat to shit copy of that for a dollar. So, of course, I bought it. You know, I can't play it, but I've got it, you know?
So you're familiar with a lot of the, I guess, the rarity of records. Not that you spend money or really care about the pristine.
I have spent money, but yeah, I'm totally aware.
Okay. All right. Like what's the most you've spent on a record?
Oh, not that much. I can think of a $100 one off the top of my head. That was an early pressing of White House that Gina and I got in Japan.
White House? Sorry, I don't
know. You don't know White House?
I don't know White House.
Really? Wow. It's these English guys, they started in the early 80s. They still make records, and they basically have high, shrill feedback while they scream obscenities. It's my cup of tea. I can't think. I don't know why that White House one jumped out, but I can't think of it any time I spent. Oh, maybe a really long time ago is around that, or maybe even a little more for the soundtrack to, it was a sci-fi. Oh, shit. And the cover was foil and it opened up like a camera lens. Soundtrack to Andromeda Strain.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty cool. That cost a little more.
Yeah. Are you a soundtrack guy? Do you collect a lot of
soundtrack? I am a soundtrack guy.
Okay. All right. I'm not. And
yeah,
you know,
I get
you know
it.
Where, but what's a good entry point for that? Because I know that's, you know, I'm missing something there. I just haven't had a really good Sherpa.
There's a lot of different styles. That's the thing. Like a lot of people would say, and I would say that if I had to pick my all-time number one favorite soundtrack, it would be John Carpenter's The Thing, and like violins, and it's not, but it's pretty intense. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie. In fact, I do have John Carpenter. Was it the Halloween? The recent Halloween, I think, from about 4 years ago.
That's a great soundtrack.
Yeah, it is. He actually wrote, did he write the music for The Thing as well?
Not that one, but his soundtracks are great too.
Yeah.
For sure. See, you know, you're lying. You know.
Well, I know a couple things. There are people, well, I know Patton, he goes way deep into soundtracks.
Oh, yeah, he's turned me on to some. And you know, do you know who Ennio Morricone is? You probably do.
Yes, yeah.
He did The Thing soundtrack.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah. It's not like that cowboy guitar thing. It's pretty cool. Anyway,
do you have a lot of Melvins and the period that you were with Melvins? Do you have all copies of those releases?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up.
Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside,
so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new.
Turn a $5 used record into a $50 functioning collectible.
Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with 2 Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VinylGuide10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VinylGuide10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits.
Do you have a lot of Melvins and the period that you were with Melvins? Do you have all copies of those releases? A lot of
I even have all the singles, yeah.
In that, when you were in Melvins creating the singles, which Hostile Ambient Takeover? Yeah. Was that just a series of recording sessions that were cobbled together as the singles, or were you guys deliberate about, let's just make 9 singles or however many it was?
Those were the songs from the album. Yeah, but we did B-sides, didn't we?
But didn't the singles come out first and then the album?
I don't remember.
That's the way I thought it was.
Maybe. I don't know. But they're the same takes, except for the B-sides we did just for the singles.
Right. Let's go back a little bit with Cows. All right. So the first record that you made with Cows was on Treehouse.
Mm.
Taint Pluribus, Taint Unum?
That's the one.
What is that Latin for?
It's a rather childish joke. E Pluribus Unum, which is on all our money, is in many one, meaning one. That we... Right, we've all united. And taint, as you may or may not know, is a schoolyard slang for the strip of flesh. Perium? Pernium? Is that what it's
pernium.
Called?
Yes.
That strip of flesh twixt, I believe, the anus and the vagina. And so therein lies the great comedy. Thor, I believe, the guitar player, came up with that, who was very politically aware. And he was always very irritated with the United States, and he proclaimed, "Taint pluribus, taint unum." That's it.
So literally translated would be, "Many taints become one."
No, there is no many, there is no one.
It's okay,
negating it. Taint tisn't in the meaning tisn't.
Okay,
there isn't many, there isn't one. It's a negation of that saying, with the childish joke using the word taint.
Okay.
It's complex yet pointless.
I'm lost in the Latin, but okay, fair enough.
I don't blame you.
How did Cows get involved in Treehouse Records back in the day?
He was local. We were in Minneapolis. He was local. There was no one interested in what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
but he stepped up to the plate. I mean...
He sure did. I'm not positive about the timeline because it was so long ago, but I think that possibly Hazelmeyer had started AMREP singles, and that maybe Mark was inspired by that. I could be wrong, and wanted to do something. And we were local. We certainly had some kind of reputation. And like you said, he stepped up to the plate, and we weren't going to say no.
Yeah. Were there conversations with Hazelmeyer or AMREP?
After that, I was just thinking about this because he lived right across the street from me at that point, and I was aware AMREP, all he had done, I think, was a couple of Hail of a Fly singles at that point. Maybe something else. Maybe he might have started Dope Guns and Fucking, I'm not sure, at that point. And I just asked him if he wanted to talk because I thought I was going to try to sway him into doing it, and he was just like, sure, I'll do it. So I didn't really have to. And that was it. You know, he's so great. We've been friends ever since. So
that first single on Treehouse... I don't know how many were made. I don't know if you know how many were made.
I don't. Chow, you mean?
No, Taint. Taint Pluribus.
Oh, the first album.
Yeah. Well, the first album. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yes, the first album.
Sorry.
That first pressing goes for around $200 these days.
Does?
Yeah.
I have a test pressing. You want to buy it? Yeah, I didn't really realize that. And then Hazelmeyer re-released in a limited run.
That's right. Now, I've noticed that some of the Cows stuff has been reissued on AMREP and the Hayes versions of them with his artwork. Some of them haven't. Pistica, I think there's a couple others that weren't, that haven't been reissued.
I thought Keith Pickett was the only one. I'm not sure though. You might be right. That's the only one I can remember now.
Orphan's Tragedy, has that been?
Oh, did that one not come out?
I don't think so.
I better get on his ass about that. Yeah, I mean, I don't, as far as I know, there's no design of why they haven't come out, or maybe he'll do a box set. I think that'd be cool.
Well, look, that the Sexy P story, that seems to be the one that that a lot of people are trying to get their hands on, especially the Hazelmeyer version of it.
Is that right?
Well, he drew it extra erotica like.
Oh, I've got the covers. I didn't know that people were looking for.
Yeah, yeah. And that one, I believe, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong here, but that was originally distributed at an art show and then made available.
Yeah, it was here in LA.
Oh, that's right, with Mackie.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, yeah. I think I got a couple.
There you go. So when he's getting ready to kind of reissue stuff, what is he? Did he just ask you guys? Does he say, "Hey, I'd like to do this," or "Here's what I'm doing," or you know, what's the conversation on that?
I'm not even positive. I think he was asking, and then once he realized we didn't, it was fine. Then he just does it and cuts us a check.
Right.
We trust him implicitly. I mean, yeah. You don't have to second guess Tom. He's not.
He's one of those guys you hand your house keys over to. You trust.
Right. Right. He's like, it's fine. No, I totally trust him, and he's a great businessman. So, and I love his art. So, it's a kind of a win-win-win.
One of my bucket list things is to go to his restaurant / pub.
That's great,
Grumpy's. Yes,
it's so good.
So, Daddy Has a Tale. It was recorded by David Livingston, and it was mixed to a videotape. And the story goes, it was such poor results.
How do you know that?
I do my research. I don't come to you prepared. I have respect for you. I come here with my shit in order. Just like you have plenty of hats around for my entertainment, I make sure I have my facts. So as I understand, it was mixed with such, I guess, substandard. Everyone was disappointed in it. And he had only a few hours to remix it. And again, there seems to be the thought that it would be remixed again someday. Has that happened yet? Or are we still listening to the same mix from the late 80s?
I think it's the same mix as the record. I was completely baffled with this mixed on videotape. And I still don't really understand what that means or how he did it. Or it must have been, all I can think of, I don't know. Dave, I know Dave very well. Those lathe cuts I've been doing were with him and my wife. We still work together. He's fantastic. But I don't know the technical behind that. I don't even really remember any disappointment. I'm sure you're right. I just don't remember. Mm-hmm. And I really like those mixes that came out. They're pretty raw, but I think it really suits the whole thing. We recorded that overnight after a show in Kalamazoo. Like after the show, went to this basement. He had set up, recorded all night, and by 5 or 6, the record was done. No overdubs, nothing.
Well, the story goes that he was disappointed in the final mix, and he's always wanted to redo it. So
that could be. And maybe they redid it. I don't remember.
Are all the tapes of Cows, multi-tracks and masters, are they somewhere? Are they well taken care of, or are they kind of scattered to the wind?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hazelmeyer might have them, because a lot of them were recorded at AMRAP. So they had, the studio was right there. So it would make sense. I've never followed up on that. And again, with Tom, it's kind of like, I'm sure it's fine kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly.
And nowadays with all the digital stuff, you really can master and press off anything. You really can.
As long as you have those masters, they weren't somewhere where they were destroyed. Like I talked to guys from Descendants, the early albums, they have no idea where those things are. No idea. They would record them. They would go on tour and then they'd come back and they're, rehearsal room was sacked by the police or the landlords had thrown all their shit on the lawn. So the master tapes could be anywhere, probably in a landfill.
Same for me personally. I really don't know where they are.
Do you look back much? Do you reflect back much on your career? You're always kind of looking forward.
Just kind of moving forward. I mean, it pops into my head. I'll think about some, how about that? But no, you don't, I don't know. Do you look back at like all the work you've done? You know what I mean? You just keep moving.
Some people do. Some people are very romantic about protecting and putting that legacy together, that sort of thing.
Oh, right. Well, I'm kind of the peace of mind that once I'm dead, I'm done. So it doesn't matter to me what happens after that, you know? And I don't try to control things that I really can't control anyway. All I do is drive myself crazy. There's that cliche, that a quote of Andy Warhol's, that you do some art, you put it out there, and while everyone's deciding if they like it, you do some more art. And that's kind of how I function. I think I've heard Buzz quote that too. It's just keep moving. And after a certain point, it's not really my business what happens. I've done everything to it, and then the world can figure it out. And someone was asking me about, you know, what are you proud of or whatever. And when I look back, there are no records that I feel like, oh, I totally blew it. You know, so I'm good with all of it.
Mm-hmm. When you move from Cows to Melvins, mm-hmm. and again, Cows, there seemed to be a lot of freedom for improv, where Melvins or even Tomahawk, you know, there's a little bit more of a kind of a solid script there. Was that a difficult change for you? Was it weird? What was your reaction?
No, what's funny about that, if we're talking about in the studio, the Melvins were definitely the freest situation. And the Cows were, we were very, you know, we were all newer to it then too, but we were pretty nervous about in the studio of like, well, what if this or that, worrying about stuff that maybe didn't need to be worried about. So in a weird way, I think Cows were more controlling and rigid. And then the Melvins were, that was what was one of the best things about working with them, is they really wanted to hear what I wanted to do in the songs. They didn't just dictate to me at all. In fact, even covering old ones, very rarely did Buzz say, oh, it actually goes like this. There might have been a couple key notes that I was missing or something, but mostly he was just like, do it how you do it. Right. So the songs are different, you know, like live. I know I wasn't playing the same because I didn't really learn the old parts. I'd listen and play along, but I didn't necessarily play the same parts. And I would say, you know, is this okay to be like, yeah, it's fine.
So even live, you had that level of freedom that you had.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, it was a very liberating experience playing with them. So it's kind of, I know it seems like what you're saying, but really the reality of it was the opposite.
Okay. Tell me how you ended up joining Melvins.
The last Cows record that we recorded, Buzz came to Minneapolis and, you know, produced it. He didn't do any of it, but, you know, it was all his ideas and stuff. And we already knew him. We'd toured with Melvins. We just really liked him, you know, and we liked the way he worked and the records he did. And he and I got pretty close traveling on big tours because we'd hang out a lot. And we just realized that, you know, we connected. And then he came out and worked with that Cows record. And we really had a good time together working in the studio together. And I think not long after that, he contacted me and was just like, hey, I'm thinking, you know, do you think you'd be interested in joining the band? And my biggest worry, of course, is it's such different music. It was like, yeah, I don't know if I can, in my head, I'm like, I don't know if I can play this stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's so supportive. He was just like, because I was kind of hedging. It's like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. And then, but yeah, I mean, that's how it happened. He just came to me and said, I think this would be really great. You want to try this?
Did you guys go straight into live? Did you go into the studio? What was that next step once you became part of the clique?
That's a good question. Because I was still in Minneapolis. And by then, they were in L.A., both of them. What did happen first? Because then they did a Electro Retard, and that was the first time I was ever in the studio with them. And some of it was old songs, and they would just say, just add something. I was like, Jesus. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what they meant. So I would just do some weird thing, and they're like, great. I don't remember if that was before touring or not. I really don't remember. I remember rehearsing a lot, and then I just don't remember which came first. And then my first tour with them was Ozfest. We flew out to New York with gear I'd never laid eyes on stage. There's your bass amp. I'd never even seen, I didn't know how it worked or anything. That was our first, we did a surprise unannounced show in San Francisco, but that was, those guys were real, real birth, baptism by fire kind of guys. So you either rise to it or, you know, you explode. So it was a little bit scary, but I really had fun.
Certainly by that time, they'd seen it all. And it was just, oh, another day. They've learned to roll with whatever's dealt with them.
That's for sure. They're really good at just going, you know, whatever they don't get stuck and then can't, they're very good at thinking outside the box, to use a cliche.
Yeah. So Electro Retard, that was when they were supposed to release that album with Man's Ruin, Frank's label.
Right. Frank Kozak's label. Didn't it come out on Man's Ruin?
So the CD did, the record was supposed to go into production and it even got test pressings, but it never went into production.
God, you know every little detail. And then it came out on Ipecac, did it?
No, it actually came out only recently. Actually, did it come out on Ipecac? Actually,
it was just CDs at first. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. But there was... But
there wasn't as much interest in vinyl at that second either.
No, that's right. But there was there were a few test pressings of that made. And those were really collectible around nerds like myself. I mean, see this? This rack is Melvin's. This is Melvin's.
Wow. So, yeah, I don't know if I've ever even seen a test pressing of that.
Okay, yeah, that was a certainly a holy grail for many up until it was reissued about 3 years ago.
I like that record a lot.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. Do you remember when, I guess you were kind of center of that when Man's Ruin was starting to really kind of crumble a bit. What do you remember about that time?
I remember we did some kind of interview with him for I don't know what. I don't really remember the details. I remember the record coming. I don't remember hearing any foul talk or anything amongst the band members. So I don't know. I in my mind, that was just kind of a one-off thing. And, you know, that was it.
You guys had already recorded things like the Maggot, the Bootlicker.
That point. We recorded those after Electro Retard.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Electro Retard, we just said, they just said, we're going into the studio. Like, we hadn't rehearsed anything. I was like, oh. And then, you know, that's what was like, I remember just like, I had no context. I didn't know what they wanted from me.
Right.
So I just did. And I like what happened. And they were very cool. They were like, yeah, sounds good. Okay. They had me sing a tight harmony. I was like, I don't sing.
But you gave it a go.
Yeah. Came out great. We did a cover song on that record. And
that's right.
Yeah. And all three of us sang. Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Because around that time, Melvin's, they would record for a bespoke record. Like, you know, all their Atlantic records were recorded. Stag was recorded in a series of sessions. Stoner, which was recorded in a series of sessions. It sounds like Electro Retard was as well. But the trilogy, it sounds like they recorded all these different songs and then pulled together the three records from a whole pile of different recordings. Is that...
Charlie Buzz is really... He plans way ahead, records that aren't recorded yet and stuff. And when I was still in New York and hadn't started rehearsing with them, he sent me demos. Well, he sent me demo of a Bootlicker anyway. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing along with that was the one I was like, I really want to be on this record. So I really want that. Made me want to make this work with them because really wanted to be on that record. So that record was pretty much worked out top to bottom. And, I wish I had a better memory. The Maggot, in my memory, we just learned them and recorded them like right there in the studio and did it pretty quick. And then the other one was with all those different people and they had, excuse me, the Crybaby. And, you know, that was a little more of a process.
Right. Okay. All right. Because Dale was on the show and he talked about the trilogy being recorded in a big pile of songs that were then separated into the three.
Oh, that's not how I remember. Well, I trust him more than me, but the Bootlicker was definitely I had that on, I think it was cassette. He had recorded it himself at home. Buzz had that. It wasn't like, they were just this song sketched in. And I just learned or wrote bass riffs, but boy, I knew I was going to like, that's still one of my favorite records I've been on. That's a cool record.
I was just listening to that the other night. That's, yeah, again, that the trilogy I just absolutely love.
Trilogy is great.
Retard, the period that you were in the band, I really enjoy it. Melvins are like Frank Zappa. You know, you can kind of, there's certain eras that you tend to gravitate more towards others. And yeah.
It's all good. I'm really glad I'm on those records, even ignoring my own whatever. I think those records are great. And again, I'm not dismissing, like you said. I really like those records. I think they're really cool.
When you hear records that you were on. Do you self-critique? Do you hear things? Do you hear mistakes and kind of cringe? Or do you, like, how were you able to listen to your past work?
Well, first and foremost, I never listen to my past work. Never. Once in a while, like, I'll see something come up on YouTube. I go, oh, I'm going to listen to it. Pretty good. And then that's it. I really don't listen to anything I've been on.
But you hear it. Like, you're not like, once oh, I'm going to listen to it.
Not that much. Yeah. But no, I don't have any glaring. Nothing like that stands out. The one thing that makes me laugh that's been going on since I was in the cows is if I'm somewhere and I don't realize something I'm on is playing, often it'll catch my ear and I'll go, what is this? This is cool. And it's always me.
Yeah.
I get some satisfaction out of that.
You continue to impress yourself.
Indeed.
All right. I think we're up for a hat change. What do you have for us now?
Oh my God. Well, this is a little absurd, but it's pretty cool.
Oh my God. That's like a Life is Hell.
Oh yeah. Huh?
Bunny ears. Yeah.
No, it's what's his name? God, I forgot his name. Oswald, the Lucky Rabbit.
Oh yeah. That was the pre Mickey.
You know, it's part of the Mickey. He's kind of a proto Mickey. I love those ears. Look at those.
It reminds me of the Life is Hell, the Matt Groening
for sure. Of
bunny ear.
I'm sure he would agree.
You know, with Hepatitis and the singles that Hazelmyer has put out, there's a lot of those that Lionel Cut artwork that has kind of Mickey-esque, almost Disney features. Why is that? I guess, you know, especially with Hepatitis, there doesn't seem to be a lot of Mickey stuff in other bands he does.
That's a good observation. I don't know. Maybe he thinks of us as kind of a Mickey Mouse operation. No, I don't know. I can't speak for him, but that's, you know, he and I have been, since the oldest days, we all did posters and stuff together and just laughed, you know, and just did ridiculous shit. And I think we like some of the same stuff. It's mostly it.
Speaking of Disneyland, when Melvins went to Ipecac, do you recall the conversations of them joining up, or you guys joining up with the label Patton and Greg performing?
I can't say for sure with those guys, but I've known Workman since the cows days. Mm-hmm. He was a big supporter. He was always around. And I think I think Greg would agree that Buzz was really a big part of Ipecac even happening. So, yeah, we were kind of there from the beginning. But Buzz had his thumb in that pie before it even went in the oven.
Yeah.
So that was always going to happen. Yeah, and it's been... Jeez, what a gift to the world Ipecac actually has turned out to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Greg is he's been on the show. He's credited Buzz for, you know, partnering.
He can't really avoid it. Yeah. Buzz is a force. He's like a tidal wave. He really is. It's like you're either going to get drenched or you're going to go along with it, you know?
Yeah. But so is Workman. You know, a lot of people don't talk about his band, Duh.
Oh, we played with Duh.
Yeah.
There were two Duhs. Has he told you that whole story?
No. What's that?
You got to ask him. It's really weird.
Okay. I'm familiar with Duh from The Unholy Hand Job and a few others. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll ask about multiple Duhs.
I used to have a Duh t-shirt that had an arrow pointing up and said I was stupid.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Speaking of the whole Ipecac crew, how did you get involved with Tomahawk?
We'll be back after these messages.
Psst. Hey, it's Nate here. And rather than run another ad for one of our wonderful sponsors, I just want to ask you all to please consider becoming a patron of the Vinyl Guide podcast. Now, as you may well know, podcasting pretty much makes no money and survives only by the passion of the host and the support of the audience, which is why patreon.com/vinylguide is so important. It's an absolute lifeline to us. I mean, $5 or $10 per month, the price of a coffee or two, is a huge help and keeps this show going. And for your generosity, I put extra stuff up at patreon.com/vinylguide. I mean, this week I have a full video of our conversation with Kevin Rupmanis, as well as having an extended version of this interview. So more content, it's commercial free, uninterrupted, and I even make the audio files high resolution, so you get to hear everything even clearer. Plus, you get the episodes early, which, when it comes to limited vinyl runs, that could make all the difference in you getting one. So, that's my request. Do me a solid, help support this show, and head up to patreon.com/vinylguide and make it so. That's all. Thanks again for your ears. Now back to the show, you gorgeous specimen, you.
No limits.
Speaking of the whole Ipecac crew, how did you get involved with Tomahawk?
Man, that's one of my favorite weird musical moments was, must have been in L.A. by this time. Was it San Francisco? Whatever. For some reason, Patton was, I think, rehearsing in the same building as the Melvins again. I can't remember, but I do remember the moment of standing in the doorway of the Melvins practice space with Buzz just talking about something. You look way down the hall, I can see Patton walking up, which isn't weird. And then Buzz goes, oh, I forgot to tell you. Patton wants to know if you want to be in some band with him. What? And then he walks up right there. So I had to make the decision on the spot. Imagine my surprise. So that's how that happened.
Okay.
I think Dwayne and he had talked about putting something together. I think Dwayne brought Stan Yu to the table, and I think Patton brought me to the table is what happened.
Okay. And how quickly did things happen after that?
Pretty quickly. I can't give you any time.
Was the band name already there? Were the songs kind of already?
There were songs to learn. That I get like the... Like it was like the Bootlicker where I got a cassette and I learned parts along with the tape. And then we all got together in Nashville in person to rehearse and record and tour.
Now, we just recently saw the announcement of the reissue of Tomahawk vinyl. Right. But no, they had the debut and I think Oddfellows, but no Mitt Gass.
Oh, I don't know. I thought they were doing them all. I talked to Workman briefly about it. Maybe they haven't announced them all. I don't remember. I think they're going to do them all.
Yeah, I'm sure they must be coming, but that was another one I was
doing
waiting
a couple
for.
They're doing a couple at a time or something, I would guess. Makes sense.
Right.
I think a lot of their vinyl is going to come back out.
They had a box set of Tomahawk vinyl many years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I remember that. That was quite a while ago.
And that's quite collectible now. But now, I guess with the reissues
what
coming
is
out,
it?
They'll probably dip.
Like when we sell vinyl, I am absolutely, and I don't mind, but I'm absolutely sure that 80 to 90% of the, at least, people never listen to the vinyl. With those albums that Rock as Hell sets out, there's always download codes, so I assume.
Well, you know, music nerds, I think a lot of us, and I'll even say myself, we like to have something that, you know, is unique and something that others don't have, you know.
I'm the same way, yeah.
Yeah, so I get that, but I'm glad that it's starting to, like Tomahawk, it's starting to come out to where, you know, us folks who don't want to spend $500 on a record.
That's the idea, is that to, you can get music so easily online or wherever, but I want people to hear the music, and even more, it'd be great if they enjoyed it, and I'd like to make money, of course, but I want people to hear the music, but then again, the objects, I love those objects. And I think, I don't know if you've seen the other records we did on Rock as Hell. That guy does packaging unlike any packaging I've ever seen. Really beautiful objects, you know. Mm-hmm. And the prices are not exorbitant when they're new. And so I enjoy that a lot, making such, because, you know, ever since I started buying records when I was a little kid, you stare at the cover, you love it, you know, and if it's extra cool, oh, my God. You know, so I like all that, but I do want people to hear the music too, you know. I did put a lot of work, and it would be neat if someone heard it and enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think we're from the one of the last generations that really appreciates the physical object.
They're objects done art. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know my kids, you know, streaming is kind of what they know. They know records because their dad plays records all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. And who wants to be like their dad?
Nobody.
Nobody.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm you're probably aware of records. There are Hepatitis records, for instance, posted on YouTube that I didn't post. YouTube puts them up, and people can just download the records. There you have it.
So, and you're happy with that. Like, as an artist, you're not benefiting, but you're just happy that the music's out there.
Well, yeah. I as a music fan, I like it. I get records that I either can't find or can't afford, and I can just download the separate songs. It's easy. And they're all separated, and it's great. I've gotten some strange, weird stuff off YouTube that I would have never found. And they sound fine.
Are you still exploring new music all the time?
Yeah. But, you know, I've noticed, and I don't know what this is. It's more stuff that's already out, older stuff. Because, Jesus Christ, there's a lot of music I've never heard at all. It's amazing to me. No matter how old, how much more there is of that available than I realized. There's a lot of music in the world. I bet you noticed. It's crazy. So I'm pretty much daily listening to music I've never heard, but I don't think much of it's new. I don't know.
My problem is filtering it all. I have to lean on people who, you know, I've come to know the kind of be part of that gatekeeper.
Absolutely.
For me.
Yeah. I read what other people recommend all the time, or even like, people I don't know, certain groups of people are like, oh, what is that? I should look into it. I do that with books and movies too. It's just, how else are you going to find it? It's people bitch about, oh, I miss the old days of flipping through records. I'm like, I do not. I like that I can find out much more stuff than I used to be able to, as far as just hearing the music.
Do you still go to record shops?
Yeah. I don't have the patience I used to have for flipping, you know. I don't know why. I do really enjoy. I still have vinyl. I still play it.
What's your local record shop? What's the shop you like to go to a lot?
There's a bunch of them around here. It's L.A. I can't even think of the name. There's one right by my kid's school. I don't know the name, though. I'm sorry. There's a lot of little vinyl places. And then Amoeba moved, and it's much smaller, so it's not really a go-to that it used to be. Sorry.
Yeah. I like in L.A., I tend to go to Permanent Records.
Yeah.
I think in Highland Park, and then there's
a
record Safari.
I remember the name. I don't remember where it is.
Los Feliz, I think.
Oh! There used to be a different one in that same area that was a little better, but whatever. It doesn't mean
Freak Beat. Yeah. Huh? Freak Beat, I think is another.
I just drove by.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them, but I don't have a steady. I don't look for vinyl that much. I'm on the internet looking, I don't know if this is sad, but Discogs has made life a lot easier for people like us that collect certain things.
Do you have a grail? Do you have something that you're like, oh shit, that is that?
I have records I've lost that I really sting. Like, did you ever hear that? That's not true. Did you ever hear that kind of ambient industrial band, Soviet France?
Yes, I have.
I used to have some of those early, amazing, crazy, weird packaging, and I don't have them. I don't know what happened. And now they
roommates.
Sell for $1 jillion, maybe. Who knows? I've had a checkered life, so who knows?
Now, so speaking of records, Hepatize, you guys have some really interesting pressing. I want to just talk about these real briefly. Sure. There's a single, Hepatitis Halo of Flies, split single, Sugar-Free Form something.
Oh yeah,
hand-drawn covers. I think you may have even drawn some of the covers.
Oh, that was from an art show that me and Hazemeyer did. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We made some weird. It kind of got into this pissing match on Facebook where I would just come up with the most preposterous cover and post it, and then Hazemeyer would do one. You know, that was a lot of fun.
There were 100 of those records total, as I
forgot
understand.
About that. Yeah,
yeah.
I think I have one of each cover because I made like 6 or 7 different covers. I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Someone should have taken pictures of those.
Well, you could take pictures of them and post them.
Yeah, there were some good ones. It was just turned into a ridiculous, absurd, offensive war.
I think that was on AMRAP, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was very early in his Lino Cut adventures. So, it's around that same time that the first Melvins, that Haze XXL one came out. Yeah, it was around that time.
Long ago. Yeah, it was quite a while ago.
There was another album I wanted to run by you where one side of it, the Hepatitis record, has
is it a triple record?
Well, the second side has grooves, but no music.
There's a I think this is what you're talking about. Is
okay.
Three disc.
Possibly.
Two of the discs are flat. they only have one side of music and there's a silkscreen image on the back.
Right.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I've got a few of those from other artists, like Seahorse and a few other bands, but I don't have one from Hepatitis like that. There's one record
I might have an extra.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. All right.
It's the one I'm thinking of. It's triple gatefold.
You're making me moist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Triple gatefold, and my wife did all the design, so anything that from here on that's offensive is her fault. And there was the record was called Omega Pig. And it was considered part, like half Hepatitis and half Teenage Larvae with Dave Livingstone. We used to do music together. So it's three discs. There's the middle one was two-sided, 33 and a third. And then there was two extra discs that were one-sided, 12-inch 45s. And on the flat side was silk-screened, an Omega sign with CU, and then the other one an Omega sign with NT. So it spelled cunt when you held it up with Omega signs. I thought that was a pretty amazing package.
I'm in. The one I'm talking about, I just looked it up. Hepatitis Volume 2, the label Lando Smiles. It is a the Giving Brain Volume 1 and the Giving Brain Volume 2.
That was really early. The first part of that was cassettes and the second part was vinyl.
And one side of it, apparently, it says, has grooves and plays, but nothing is recorded on it.
I don't remember. It's possible. It sounds like me. I really don't remember. Yeah, that was like our first stuff we ever put out. This guy, he's great. God, I can't think of his name. He's going to be mad. Anyway, first we did like a four cassette box thing. That was part one. And volume two was on vinyl. And, that stuff's on the Bandcamp.
Okay.
So it can be downloaded. That stuff's weird. There was no drummer at that point.
So when you make music now, and Gina, your wife, does the artwork.
And some of the music.
Mouse goes, right? Am I saying that right?
All the artwork. Yep.
Does she do the artwork after listening to the music? Is it inspired by the music? How is her art connected to the music that's on the record?
Gina. I don't think she's here. She doesn't, they're not already done. So she does them for the record, but I can't tell you directly how much she's influenced by the music. It's probably just just a feeling of, the feeling. That's the kind of stuff. She likes that kind of sickening quality of art and music and movies where you're just kind of going, this is awful. That kind of thing.
There is some elements. It's almost like The Thing. I think the cover
she loves The Thing.
Done Root Mantis. That does seem like the creature that's kind of.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I can see that. And she made those covers specifically with the records in mind, for sure.
Is there an element of DIY? Like, I mean, are you guys putting these together? Or are they all kind of manufactured?
No, unquestionably. It's DIY to the bone. It's high labor, low cost kind of situation, just to throw it out before I forget, the back cover of the Done with Rickmanis is art by Trevor, a really beautiful collage.
Okay.
Rock as hell. I don't know how he does that. Speak of DIY, Joe, and I wish I knew how to say his name for sure after all these years, Joe. He makes all those covers. He does it. Hundreds and hundreds of covers. Silk screening and all kinds of crap. And I don't know how he did it. The new one, the back cover with Trevor, it's almost like it's matted in the disc, in the cover. There's a bevel cut around. I don't know how he did it. But I forgot the question.
Me too. That's okay. Hat change. Time for a hat change. No,
bat per se.
Oh, that's kind of cool. All right, kind of bat ears.
I'm a bat.
Your hats are getting smaller and smaller. You started with the big cowboy.
It's like
hat.
My brain. matching set.
So yeah, we're talking about DIY. So putting them together and act
everything.
And
putting your hands all over. The U.S. vinyl. Rock as Hell is covering all the vinyl sales. Everywhere in the world, except for we're doing US and Canada. And we're just doing orders through Gina's Facebook and Trevor's probably his
Bandcamp or whatever, yeah,
something like that. Yeah, so yeah, it's definitely hands-on people, and she deals directly with the people buying the vinyl.
Yeah,
and we mail them from here. We stuff them. It's DIY down to the bone.
So when I heard about these records about 2 weeks ago, I reached out to Gina. I think it's Mouse Goes on Facebook, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And I said, yes, I want some. She's like, great, I'll put you down.
Yeah.
That was it. So I'm just assuming that at some point she's going to reach out and say, hey, all right, that's here's exactly your total. Right. Here's your total this hour. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's exactly right. Because Rock as Hell announced it too. So we had to respond because he does pre-sales. So people were calling. We're just like, yeah, yeah. And yeah, we take the info. And we have people that buy everything that we always just contact them and say, hey, a new one's coming out. You want it? Okay, great. So it's good. Yeah, you'll be hearing back from her, and you'll be getting the. She's got a list. She's very precise and OCD. So you'll be getting. You're taken care of. Believe you me.
That's who you want as a business partner. You want someone who's a little like overly aggressive in the organization. Yes,
yeah. I'm the opposite, so it's perfect.
Like yin and yang. So is it going to ship in February? Are you gonna ship it? Okay, so you got them there in the house right now. You got a couple of boxes. You're just waiting.
Oh yeah, the dining room is full of covers and vinyl.
Oh, beautiful.
We've been stuffing records.
Can people get them scrawled on or signed if they so request?
Yeah, it's an extra $1,000. It's no problem.
That's fine. All right, PayPal.
Yeah. Venmo. People always ask. It's not a problem.
Great. All right. So I'm going to put links in this episode page where people can order, and I imagine they'll go pretty quick.
Yeah,
there's not that many.
But we haven't taken the money, so yeah. Do it for Gina Squaws, not Mouse Squaws.
Gina Squaws, yes.
Her Facebook, let me see if I can. I mean, she'll get it either way, but that'll be a little better for her for organization.
I'll go back and I'll look at how. There's okay, instructions okay. on how to do it. I just know I followed the instructions
really,
2 weeks ago.
As hands-on as we are, no one's ever fallen through the cracks, so.
Right.
The worst thing that'll happen is we'll sell out before you get one, but that won't happen.
That's all right. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's a record. Can't get too emotional.
Well, I mean, if she got your name, you're getting
it. Yeah. Finally, you know, now the pandemic is kind of, you know, settling down. Do you see yourself doing live sets?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. It's a little bit, things are different now. You know, a lot of places closed. Rehearsal spaces, even. It's a whole thing's dicey. What I've been, the stuff I do with David and Gina, we call it Lords and Lady Kevin. And we've been doing live shows because it's just a two-piece kind of strange thing. So we've been doing those. I haven't done any hepatitis yet, but, you know, God willing. And as far as Trevor, I don't know how we would arrange that if indeed it would to ever happen. That might not happen.
Right. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide and sharing all that all those maddening facts about the records of your life and career and even the ones you have there in your house. How big is your record collection, by the way? Is it pretty expensive?
It's stripped way down than it used to be. I don't know. 300 maybe.
Okay.
Used to be a lot bigger, but digital is really... I'm more about oddness now, keeping hold of the ones that I want physical copies that are things that I'm not going to see around so much. You know, I don't need a copy of Aerosmith's Rocks. I can just have the MP3s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I've got plenty of oddball records.
Do you have any records that are particularly precious? Like one like, oh my God, the house is on fire. What three records can I grab?
Well, there's one here that I really like. Matthew Barney.
Whoop, hang on a sec. You're off mic.
Do you know who Matthew Varney is?
Matt Varney. No, I know Mike Varney.
Matthew Barney.
Barney. He's no, I don't. He's
an artsy movie maker. And he did a series of movies, Cream Master. And actually, Dave Lombardo was in one of the movies.
Oh, okay.
And I got that from him. It's a soundtrack. So it's this museum piece, basically. Here's the cover.
Oh, nice.
Where's the... But there, see that? Here's the best part. This is the artist, Matthew Barney, in the middle. Oh, shit. How do you do that? There we go.
Okay. Oh, dear. Yeah, that's a cold. That's a cold day.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite records that I own. Actually, that's Lombardo right there. Oh no, it isn't.
Oh.
No, that's not him. But that's the scene. He plays drums on this. And it was funny because I'd never heard of the movies. I was in New York, and I just randomly went in to watch this artsy movie. And I'm just sitting there, and is that Lombardo? He had a wig on, and he's playing it. And I asked him, I go, "Were you?" He goes, "You saw that crazy movie?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You want the soundtrack?" And I go, "Yeah." So that's one of my favorites, I think.
Oh, actually, you know, one thing I was going to ask you about, being in Australia and all that, you must be familiar or even friends with the Cosmic Psychos.
Oh yeah, I've known them forever. I haven't seen them in years.
Yeah, yeah, they're coming out. In fact, I'm connecting up with Ross here in another week or so. What are some of your good memories of Australia and particularly the Cosmic Psychos?
The Cows toured with them in the U.S. I never toured with them over there. The Cows never went to Australia, but Tomahawk and Melvins did. So I've been there a few times. And, you know, it's really my wife, who is quite a bit younger than me, got in to see me play on a fake ID with Tomahawk or somebody. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
There, that's it.
Okay. That's it. Nothing Cosmic more Psychos amusing are, after that.
Cosmic Psychos are great friends. I haven't talked to them in years, but yeah.
Yeah. Ross just wrote a children's book.
Oh, I would really like to have that. What's it called? Do you know?
Oh, it's something like the little roo kangaroo. Oh, you know?
Yeah. It's not the wee cunt.
No, no, it's actually, he's willfully kind of peeled it back. It's still got the Cosmic Psychos humor, but for kids, like they've really powdered it down. In fact, if you send me your details, I'll send you a copy of it.
I'd love it. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to put all the ordering links and instructions here in this episode page. And everyone, grab a copy of these Dunn and Root Manus Crackpot Whorehead. There's only 360 blue vinyl. And then Hepatitis Uneat, which has about 310 copies. So again, get them fairly quick if you want to put them in your collection. And again, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide, mate.
I really appreciate it.
There we are, Mr. Kevin Root Manus, here on the Vinyl Guide podcast. And just a quick programming note, in the interview, Kevin and I spoke about David Livingston and some of the work that he did with Hepatitis and some of Kevin's projects. Unfortunately, in the day or days after this interview was conducted, David passed to his next plane of existence. So our deepest condolences go out to David's family and circle of friends. He left behind quite the legacy of work. Look him up. David B. Livingston, thank you so much for your work while here on Earth. And that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, post them in the different groups in Facebook or some of the Reddit forums or whatever like that. Make sure to spread the word here on The Vinyl Guide. That is always very appreciated. And also feel free to leave us a positive review on iTunes. Dial us up there, 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars, whatever platform you listen to us on. Say something nice. That is always appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and support the music scene, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.